Hello and welcome to the Primary Care Respiratory Society podcast series. I'm Catherine Hickman, Executive Chair of PCRS. Each podcast you will hear insightful topics, interviews, experiences and conversations around a plethora of respiratory themes, as well as actionable tips and strategies for you to use in your day-to-day practices. Thank you for joining us and we hope you enjoy this podcast.
Hello and welcome to this Primary Care Respiratory Society podcast series. This is a podcast designed for our non-members, but we always make it clear that our members are perfectly entitled to listen to this too. We hope you'll find it useful. I'm Steve Holmes. I'm a general practitioner in Somerset. I've just finished a nice day being duty doctor, seeing lots of different things from all sorts of different parts of medicine. And I'm joined today by Ren. Ren, can you introduce yourself?
Of course. Hello. Very, very happy to be here. So my name is Ren Lawler, and I'm an independent nurse consultant. And I have spent my day teaching school nurses about asthma and the various issues that comes with that. So we've both had quite respiratory focused days, I would say.
Yes, and I have to confess, I didn't have a lot of contact on smoking cessation today, but it's something that we're involved in so much of primary care in the community and other parts. And I guess in smoking, really vital within that school group nowadays.
Oh, very much so. And, you know, one of the big issues that comes up consistently now is not just about smoking, but about vaping and e-cigarettes. Not something we're going to cover in this podcast, but we are going to cover this in another podcast. So a bit of a stay tuned kind of moment. So this podcast is going to be more about the sort of top tips. I think, Steve, that's what we were going to cover. So top tips that we can discuss with our patients who are going to make an attempt or make a quit attempt or a cessation attempt. Or whatever sort of language they're using.
And I guess probably what I think as my first top tip, and this comes from a service development, perhaps old, most people would say, but perhaps a senior clinician is, my top tip is smoking cessation is a key role for every healthcare professional in the NHS. We should be thinking about that all the time, and that's at the service level. It's some, you know, people shouldn't be able to say, well, it's not really important to me, because it usually is. Surgical outcomes are worse if our patients are smoking. Mm. You know about the cardiorespiratory cancer type links with smoking.
Yes.
A lot of our pregnant ladies have problems because of smoking, and another area we don't always address. So loads of things for us to do. And
I guess mental health is another, wasn't it? I think it's one of those interventions that every single clinician can do and should do for every patient.
So if we sort that out, I think the first thing to say is we've got very brief advice going on elsewhere.
Yes.
And that's in a different podcast. So again, look it up. Not very long. Really good learning there. Mm-hmm. But okay, what are your top tips, Ren, for people who are smoking?
Oh my goodness. Well, so I take a bit of, I've been helping people with smoking cessation for many, many years, so maybe over 20 years, which might be showing my age slightly. So one of the first things, and one of the most important things, is determining why you want to do this. Now, this is a bit of a grey area, and there might be people listening saying, oh, no, the first step is setting a date. But setting a date to me comes after determining why you actually want to do this. Now, certainly in my experience with patients who have already got COPD, for example, they've already got cardiovascular disease, they've already got, God forbid, lung cancer or something like that, and you talk about smoking cessation with them, and the kind of immediate rebuff is, well, what's the point? I'm already sick. Yeah? So asking them to set a date, in my experience, doesn't really work. If you explain to them how, even though they have that condition, even though they have that diagnosis, if they're able to stop smoking, it can reduce their symptoms. It can improve their quality of life. In some cases, may improve the length of time, potentially, that they've got left. Then you can start to have a conversation with them. Well, if we can lengthen your life, if we can improve your quality of life, what are the sort of things that you might like to do?
That's really handy, because I heard a beautiful comment from, it was actually two cancer specialists, lung cancer surgeon and an oncologist. And both of them said, you know, there's really good evidence that my surgery is more effective if the patient stopped smoking when they have the operation. They recover faster and it's more likely to be successful. And the oncologist talking about the treatments that they use having a better impact on people with carcinoma of the lung who've quit their smoking. So never give up. It's worth it.
Absolutely. So it's, you know, it's one of those things where, so I had a patient, I'll just give you a bit of an example. And so he was in his 60s, he had COPD, he had quite advanced COPD, he had lung cancer as well. And I said to him, just hypothetically, if you had another 5 years even, what would that mean to you? And he said, well, if I had another 5 years, I might get to see my granddaughter get married or something. I think she was engaged. And when you look at the statistics about when, if you stop smoking, the possible lung, not necessarily improvement that you get, but the improvement in symptoms, the potential increase on life expectancy, then showing him that graph was a really powerful thing. And it doesn't matter, you know, it didn't mean that he was going to be able to stop, but it meant that it gave him an incentive to try, which led to him setting a date, which was the next part.
Okay, so why is setting a date important?
So setting a date is important because it gives you a focus, it gives you a goal. If you look at people who decide out of nowhere or whatever to run the marathon, they don't set the date, but they'll work towards it. Because it's stuck. You can't change that date that you're going to have to run that race. And it's the same thing with any kind of endeavor that we take. If we set a date, it kind of puts it in the diary. So it kind of gives you a kind of work towards, as opposed to saying, oh, I'll stop this evening. You know, you can't do that because it takes too much sort of thought. It puts too much pressure on. If you say, I'm going to stop on this date, and the important thing is that they let people know. Family need to know. Friends need to know. Work colleagues need to know. Because if they don't tell anyone, they're going to end up in a situation potentially where people around them offer them a cigarette, encourage them to smoke, come down on your break for a cigarette with us. You always do. Why are you not coming down with us? So setting a date isn't just about picking a date out of the diary. It's about letting everybody know, I'm going to undertake this endeavour. I need your help.
Okay. And can I just ask a really straightforward question? Why can't people just quit smoking? Why don't they just stop?
Why don't they just stop? Because it's one of the most difficult things that they will ever do in their life if they are a smoker. Smoking isn't just about nicotine addiction or tobacco dependency. That's two major parts of it. But what we ignore quite a lot is the behavioural side, the social side, the anxiety side, all of that other kind of psychological, the social psychological side that goes with smoking, particularly if you're a lifelong smoker. If people around you know you as a smoker, when you then stop smoking, you change, in a way, how you look to other people, and that makes them anxious. So in a weird way, it makes other people more comfortable if you continue doing something that they've known you to do for their whole life or your whole life.
That's a really interesting thought, that actually when someone stops, all their friends are looking at them in a slightly odd way. But actually, I can see it now you talk about that. I guess the other thing is, a lot of my patients will say, look, it's a stressful time. I've got young children. My husband's away my partner's away, whatever it might be, there's always a lot of stress, anxiety, depression in life. Mm. Therefore, it's not really the right time or safe for me to stop, is it?
So there's two questions there. Is it the right time? Is it safe for me to stop? So my kind of advice around that would be, if you're not ready and you don't feel ready, okay. Because there's no point us as clinicians trying to encourage or force someone to undertake a change to their life that they're not ready and not able to do. Because the worst case scenario is you encourage them to do something, they say they're not ready, they go away and try it because you said that they should, and they fail. And if they fail, one, they're going to feel very low about themselves. But the other thing is, they're going to find it really difficult to come back to you and say, I failed. Because as humans, we don't want to let other people down. So there's two things around that. There's that part. The other part around it is to have a conversation with them and say, okay, well, you know, when do you think would be a good time? When do you see in your future? What needs to change? What needs to settle down? What needs to get better for you to feel in the right place to make this change? Because there's always going to be some reason or some excuse to not change our behavior. And we don't just see that in smoking. We see it in gambling. We see it in obesity. We see it in alcohol. You know, any of those kind of things. So having a discussion about, okay, well, what needs to change in your life? What needs to settle down for you to feel better and ready? What needs to change?
And I guess one of the key things around that is getting that opportunity for a little bit of time for that sort of patient to help to walk part of the path with them and help them on that route to success.
Yes, and I completely agree with that. But I also know that the sort of backstory to that is GPs or practice nurses, whatever, will say, we don't have the time to have that conversation. I don't have 15, 20 minutes to talk about somebody's life and the issues. So that's when we need to look a little bit beyond. We need to think about not just NHS smoke-free and things like that, but we need to think about things like social prescribers, care coordinators, you know, those kind of additional sort of services. It may be that that person is smoking more than they would usually because they're relying on food banks, because they're in fuel poverty, because of a sort of health inequality sort of point of view. And you know, Steve, as you know, PCRS, we've got lots of resources on that kind of thing. And we've got lots of lovely videos and things that get people to think about that a little bit more. And I think when we're looking at tobacco dependency, and trying to help people to step away from that, we need to think about those stresses that might be keeping them in that frame of mind that they can't step away from this just yet.
And of course, there's a really good document, the Treating Tobacco Dependency Pragmatic Guide, produced by PCRS two or three years ago now, that is a really good bedtime read, the sort of read that's going to put you to sleep, but is going to enthuse you and get you ready for your next day's work. So yeah. That might be another thing for people to look out for.
Yeah, I think so, definitely, definitely.
And any other really good top tips that you can think of about people who smoke? Because I noticed that patients tend not to wake up for a cigarette during the middle of the night.
No, so the vast majority don't. You may have some patients who do, in which case you want to think about that 24-hour nicotine patch and that sort of thing. You might want to talk about insomnia. You might want to think about why they're not sleeping. Menopause is a huge one. So for, you know, women who have night sweats and just not being able to sleep at night may get up and have a cigarette when they wouldn't normally. So dealing with the menopause, the night sweats is more important than thinking about the cigarettes, perhaps. But the other thing that I think is really important is trigger avoidance. Now, we talk about this, interestingly, in sort of asthma. We talk about avoiding triggers. But actually, it's exactly the same in sort of tobacco dependency. So people will have a level of habitual cigarettes throughout the day. So the cigarettes that they'll perceive as needing, which is where you've got the physiological drive, that real craving for a cigarette. And then you'll have the ones that are habitual. In other words, I always have one after dinner, for example. So the sort of things that we can talk about becomes more behavioural than anything else. So if your patient always has a cigarette after dinner, for example, they take their plate to the kitchen, they come back, they sit in their armchair, cigarettes and the lighter are on the arm of the armchair, the ashtray is on the other side, and that's what they do after dinner. So actually the discussion you want to have with them is, okay, I'm not asking you not to have that cigarette necessarily if they're very anxious and they're not ready to stop, but make it a bit harder on yourself. So wash up first. Sit in a different chair when you come back. Put the cigarettes in one cupboard and the lighter in another. And what that does is it just creates a space of time between that automatic habit of this is what I do after dinner to is this something I really want to do after dinner? Because they've got to take 3 or 4 steps to get to where they would normally get to within 30 seconds without even realizing.
Brilliant. And we have to really think about how we get that sort of message out. And I've got one last tip for our non-members that hopefully all our members are aware of. But please just be aware that people who smoke with asthma, their inhaled corticosteroid that they're using, maybe using regularly, is far less effective because of the smoking. Mm. Yeah. And so with that in mind, probably even more important to help to encourage our population of smoking people with asthma about how we can help to improve their care. So once again, Ren, it's been marvellous doing this podcast with you. Thank you very much indeed. And thank you to the listeners too for really engaging in this Primary Care Respiratory Society podcast. Watch out for other ones coming up. Don't forget the vaping one will be here before too long.
Yeah.
And Ren, thanks very much again.
And to you. Take care.
Thank you for listening. If you know somebody that may be interested in this podcast that is yet to become a member of PCRS, please direct them to the PCRS website and take the first step to inspiring more respiratory leaders.